Good afternoon and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for January 9th, 2018. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scawanini with co-host Annie Esposito. Well, today's edition of Corporations and Democracy began with several headlines over the last year that highlighted for how many generations, let alone decades, energy corporations have known that burning of fossil fuels is a cause and the primary cause of climate change. Despite that knowledge, the fossil fuel industry has acted to not only minimize public awareness of this problem, but to actually undermine any public progress to counter climate change. And thus we drift slowly toward further climate chaos that will alter the stability of civilization as we know it. All 7 billion of us who share this one known planet that contains the only life known in the universe, let alone the only self-aware intelligent life. This is the issue that defines our era and for which our descendants will remember us for what we did and did not do about the problem. So what can individuals do to counter the trend of climate change? What can you, listeners to today's program, do locally to counter not just the effects of climate change, but the causes? Is there hope for individuals acting locally to affect such a large global problem? How do we think global and act local, as the saying goes, on this single most existential issue of our era of history, climate change? To begin to answer such lofty questions, we have two guests with us today. Both are live here in the studio in Philo, and both work with local organizations to counter climate change. Margot Frank of Ukiah is one of a handful of volunteers who formed the Coordinating Council for Elders Climate Action, a national grassroots movement dedicated to preserving a livable planet for our grandchildren, future generations, and all life. She's been instrumental in helping form a Northern California chapter of ECA, again, that's Elders Climate Action. And along with Eileen Mitro, also of Ukiah, Margo has recently started a climate action group in the Ukiah area. Margo balances her climate action commitments with her devotion to being an engaged grandma and her part-time psychotherapy practice. So, Margo Frank, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Thanks, Steve.
And Randall McDonald lives in Comanche and for the past 17 years has been a member of the Comanche Volunteer Fire Department, currently serving as the department's safety officer. He works in the field of information technology, helping run a small company based in Comanche that provides continuing education to healthcare professionals throughout the United States. Randall has spent a decade working in Oregon government and politics during the 1980s and 1990s, including a term as an elected city council member. He currently serves on the executive committee of the Sierra Club's Redwood chapter, which includes Mendocino County, and on the steering committee of the Santa Rosa chapter of the Citizens Climate Lobby. In addition to his family life, running a small business and maintaining his rural property, Randall's primary focus these days is on the problem of climate change and what we can do about it. So, Randall McDonald, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
So I think a lot of our listeners probably already agree with us that there's a grave problem with the climate. So maybe we'll spend a lot of the show talking about what to do about it, but maybe a little bit at the beginning just to check off some of the things that make us certain that there is a problem. So, Margot, how do you know for sure that we're in a stew here?
Well, I am no scientist, but I do know that over 97% of climate scientists around the world know that climate change is real and that it is a result of human behavior and activity. I really became more aware of it probably in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And I really just got very hopeless in the face of it, felt really helpless. And I started learning more. And you know, the downside of knowing more is that it can reinforce my sense of doom, but it also lights a fire in me to do whatever I can. So the things that I really started to notice was how the planet is getting hotter every year, the surface temperature of the planet, that just life in Ukiah is different than it used to be. You know, 20, 30 years ago, we did not have these kinds of devastating forest fires that whip through communities now. The glaciers are melting and the seas are rising. One of the leaders of Elders Climate Action lives in South Florida and talks about the sunny day flooding where the water just seeps right up through the pavement. And is flooding the streets. We've certainly had a lot of extreme weather events, and even the military says that it's one of the major national security threats that we are facing. And we now understand that the Syrian war really was rooted in devastating droughts there that forced people into the cities, and it's created a huge refugee problem and a terrible war, and that's going to be the future if we don't do something about this.
Thank you. Yeah, okay. And Randall, you also talked a lot about to different groups about what the problem is and how come you know that we're facing a grim crisis.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we really are. In the past, though, the impacts of climate change have been and masked in large part. It's often been viewed as a problem for the future, the next generation, etc. For instance, 93% of the heat that's been generated from human-caused global warming is absorbed by the sea. And we all live above, you know, the surface of the ocean, so we don't observe what's happening there. But sadly, now we are starting to see that, you know, coral reefs are dying at an increasing rate since the 1980s. 29% of the shallow water corals in the Great Barrier Reef died in 2016. That's the largest living structure on Earth, suffering a major die-off. But 2017's extreme weather events have stripped the mask off climate change's effects. We're seeing above the surface of the ocean where we all live clear impacts in our world today. This year's hurricanes, the wildfires in the western United States, the extreme cold weather in Europe and Russia right now, all are being exacerbated by climate change. So as Margaret said, you know, 16 of the past 17 years have been the hottest on the record planet-wide. The North Pole has melted rapidly since the 1980s. The number of record hot days has far exceeded the number of record cold days for the past two decades worldwide. Sea levels are rising, the ocean is becoming more acidic as it absorbs CO2, impacting sea life, including along our Mendocino coast, where ocean heat and acidity have contributed to the kelp forest die-off. So the evidence is in our face. We don't even need to look to computer models, sadly, which means that it's now time to take action because the impacts are starting to become pretty hard on us, and we look forward to what kind of world our children and grandchildren are living in, and we don't see the bright future we long for them to have.
Yeah, so that's you convinced me. I'm ready to do something. And Margo, you and Randall represent two different groups and two different approaches to the same problem. Margo, do you want to talk about the structure of your group and what are the goals? How are you dealing with this?
Yeah, well, I'm part of the Elders Climate Action group. We are an offshoot of a nonprofit, a national nonprofit Conscious Elders Network. And we are a movement of elders who are not in this for ourselves, but in it for our grandchildren and all future generations. So what we're trying to do is to build a movement of elders. Elders are the people who are most likely to be registered to vote and to actually show up and vote in this country. And so we carry a powerful voice, and we're trying to create the political will in this country to get legislation and action happening on a national, state, and local level. And in the last 6 months and coming into this year now, our focus really is less on what we can do at the national level and more on how we can form groups and chapters in communities, regional areas, states, engaging elders in whether it's that they're engaged in an action that's sponsored by another organization. We have over 60 partner organizations, including Citizens Climate Lobby, who really helped us get off the ground. They've been very supportive of us. We're an all-volunteer organization except for one very part-time paid person. So we are limited in what we can accomplish, but we have big ideas. We want to be able to say to elected people in D.C., that we represent a million elders who are concerned about the future of this planet and a viable life here. So at the national level, we have various committees. We meet virtually via the Zoom platform and connect with other people who are interested in taking action on this. We do an e-newsletter that goes out every month with all kinds of information about what people are doing and inspiration and information on things that people can do. We do a once-a-month national call with a speaker. This month we're going to have a young woman named Jill Kubitz, who founded an organization called Dear Tomorrow, talking about what that organization does and how – as a way to engage people in climate change, we can write letters to ourselves in the future or to future generations. So those are on the national level. And then we've formed in Northern California, we formed an Elders Climate Action chapter last year. And mostly that is people in the Bay Area, although there's somebody from the Lake Tahoe area and myself who are trying to get that going. And again, to engage people, going out and talking to seniors living in senior housing settings, for instance, or at senior centers is one of the ways that local chapters are trying to engage people. We are nonpartisan, and so we believe that anyone who cares about future generations can care about climate change and want to do whatever they can. And then locally, towards the end of last year, Eileen and I, as an offshoot of an environmental action group, started to form a climate action group. And we've had a couple of meetings. We meet once a month in Ukiah. I think we're going to meet on the second Saturday, February 10th, from 12 to 2 will be our next meeting at the Methodist Church. And we're just still kind of forming where we're going to focus our energy. But at our last meeting last week, and what came out of that were a couple of areas of focus. One is learning more about carbon sequestration and how here in a rural community that has an agricultural and forestry base, how we can take actions here. Those might be the ways we can be most effective in addressing climate change here. And also spreading information about things like biochar burning, different ways of doing burn piles that don't add to more greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And the other piece is looking at education and how is climate science being taught now in the high schools and middle schools, and how might we engage in an intergenerational way with those kids and have some intergenerational actions that we take, and also help them to connect with resources that we've become aware of that are available now for teachers. So that's kind of the focus of what we're doing.
Well, Steve, you've actually gone to some of Margo's climate action for elders meeting, right?
Yeah, a couple of them. A meeting a month ago was one of them. I should mention that to everyone. And also there was a first book club meeting some weeks back focusing on a particular book that is highly recommended. And that is a book called Drawdown, the Most Comprehensive Plan Ever Proposed to Reverse Global Warming. edited by Paul Hawken. We can talk a little more about that later, perhaps. But
yeah, why don't we come back to some of the things that you're talking about actually doing after we get a chance to ask Randall about your Citizens Lobby group.
Yeah, the Citizens Climate Lobby is a international, nonprofit, nonpartisan volunteer organization. We have more than 450 chapters worldwide. Our mission is to build the political will for climate solutions by enabling breakthroughs in personal and political power. In the United States, we're focusing on a national plan to address climate change called the Carbon Fee and Dividend Plan, which will dramatically reduce carbon pollution while growing the U.S. economy and saving American lives.
All right, that sounds wonderful. I like that. So here we are in little old Mendocino, but we have these two possible ways to become engaged, which is really neat.
I just want to mention, I want to talk up Citizens Climate Lobby a little bit also, Randall, because I think that the things that stand out for me about that organization are not only is it a nonpartisan, but they have specifically reached out across the aisle to Republicans
right.
in Congress in particular and helped to a Democrat and a Republican congressmen form something called the Congressional Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. And I know that caucus, some people are critical of that it hasn't done enough. It's not radical enough. It's not action-oriented enough. But it has grown in the last year from something like half a dozen members to like 90 members or something now, people who you'd never think would be on it. Who knows what their reason is for some of them joining it. But they are working to engage across the aisle in looking at solutions to climate change. And I think it wouldn't exist without Citizens Climate Lobby really helping to encourage that.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, Margot. And, you know, the tragedy of this situation is that it's been pushed into a partisan box in the United States only. There's only one major national party in the world that's denying the reality of what's happening on our planet. And it's being driven by big interests, the climate denial industry, we call it. But let's think back to just two presidential elections ago. John McCain's climate agenda, when he ran against Barack Obama, was more aggressive than Barack Obama's. So this doesn't deserve and should not be a partisan debate. And in fact, we're running out of time to play those games anymore. We need to get serious. So we're very happy. Many members of Congress have stepped forward to join this caucus because it at least lays some groundwork towards some kind of solution. We know also the Trump administration is an example. If we establish a climate solution across our country, it needs to be broadly embraced by both parties and independents so that it has staying power, so that the next administration that comes in can't just change the rules and all of a sudden our big plan falls apart. And that's why we believe the Carbon Fee and Dividend Plan has real potential to be that plan that transcends partisanship and gets the American people excited about how we can solve this problem.
Yeah, so you've been pretty careful to keep an equal number of Republicans and Democrats on this.
Right.
A Republican can't join without bringing a Democrat, and a Democrat can't join without bringing a Republican.
Exactly. All right. Okay, you've got that happening. Now, you brought up one of your main campaigns here, Carbon Fee Plus Dividend. So we're going to spend a little time talking about what is that? What does that mean, Carbon Fee Plus Dividend?
Yeah, we actually call it the Carbon Fee and Dividend Plan, and it has three parts. It's a three-legged stool. So the first part of our plan is a fee on CO2 equivalent emissions that's levied at the source of the production, so at the mouth of the coal mine, at the wellhead, or at the port of entry for fossil fuel imports. The fee starts low, $15 per ton of CO2 equivalent, and it increases steadily each year by $10 per ton, over time making carbon-intensive products more expensive, while low-carbon products become more affordable. What this leads to is rapid pollution reductions through natural market mechanisms, guiding us to a more energy-independent, clean national economy. So that's the first part, the fee. All net revenues raised from the fee are returned in the form of a dividend distributed to every American household equally on a monthly basis. Most people, especially low and middle-income folks, will receive more in their dividend than the price increases they'll experience due to their incrementally rising carbon pollution fee. And what that does is it protects the most vulnerable folks from the impacts of rising fossil fuel prices as we move our nation to a post-carbon economy. And as the fee increases, people will have more money to spend, leading to economic growth and job creation. So that's the second leg of the three-legged stool, the dividend. The third leg is a border tariff adjustment for international trade. That's placed on exported and imported goods, requiring all nations which trade with the United States to have an equivalent carbon pricing mechanism, or else they'll have to pay at a significant and incrementally increasing tariff on trade. What that'll do is put teeth into the Paris Agreement by, basically, the massive U.S. economy has significant leverage with our international trading partners. If they want to trade with us, they'll see that it's economically advantageous to take care of their own carbon pollution problem. And it also prevents U.S. companies that want to pollute from seeing an easy way to leave the U.S. and do so, because then they're on the other side of the border tariff. So again, it's the fee, the dividend, and a international trade tariff.
So this phrase here, carbon fee and dividend program, sounds like the best idea that I, and I imagine many of our listeners, have never heard of.
Yeah.
So how new is this?
It's been around for a while. There is one significant government that has employed a very close variation of this. That's the government in British Columbia. And since 2008, they've had a revenue-neutral carbon tax that operates very much like our carbon fee and dividend. But since they're just a province of Canada, not a nation themselves, they don't have the third component, the border tariff adjustment. But British Columbia citizens love it. It's been very politically viable. And also, we've seen economic growth and significant emissions reductions. So right now, other Canadian provinces are looking at adopting it. But more popular alternatives you've probably heard of cap and trade programs more than you've ever heard of carbon fee and dividend.
Indeed. Mm-hmm.
And so we're doing our best to get the word about this very viable alternative to that kind of approach.
And last year, California passed, beefed up and extended the life of California cap and trade program. But I know that there were people in the California legislature who were aware of cap and trade, of carbon fee and dividend, and that was part of that conversation, but it did not win out in the end.
Yeah, I have some problems with cap and trade. It's like if there's a little place in Eastern Europe that isn't making any pollution, then they can sell their credits to some place that is. How is that a net save in pollution?
Exactly. There's a lot of problems with cap and trade. And I'm not sure why it has been more viable politically or where why.
Well, in part due to politics.
Yeah.
Citizens Climate Lobby takes some responsibility for not having it been as effective in past years about getting out our messages. So I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to talk with you and your listeners about the carbon fee and dividend plan. And cap and trade was a program developed as a compromise between business interests and the environmental community that helped stop our acid rain problem. So it has been shown as an effective model, and therefore, because it was out there already in policy, many governments looked at that as a viable option, not knowing about carbon fee and dividend. Carbon fee and dividend, too, works best when imposed at a national level. So if we're just doing a state-by-state sort of thing, it's harder for states to make something like that work. I will note that the California legislature in August of 2016, both chambers passed a joint resolution calling on Congress to establish carbon fee and dividend nationwide. And California's legislature did that, even though we have a viable and working cap and trade program here in this state. They recognize there's a better model, but it needs to be imposed at the national level. And so we're calling on folks to talk to your members of Congress, get the word out to editorial boards and your neighbors and friends that we have a better way, and let's get going and get this thing done.
Let me ask to tie two phrases together we've used here, carbon fee and dividend, and then back to the Congressional Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. There's a mouthful for you. But are those 30 Republicans and 30 Democrats on board the carbon fee and dividend program, or is it something they're still just considering, or what's the relationship between those two?
Great question. You know, and the Climate Solutions Caucus has formed and grown this this past year in Congress, but it's pretty new, and for many Republicans, even mentioning climate change is like the third rail of politics. You're immediately possibly going to get primaried. And in fact, one of the members of our advisory board was a Republican member of Congress who stood up and worked for climate change, and then in his next primary election was defeated by someone much more a climate change denier, let's just say mm-hmm. that. But the Climate Solutions Caucus members don't all support carbon fee and dividend yet, and that's one of the challenges we face. And then some members of Congress, such as our own Jared Huffman, our great congressman from our district, would happily support that along with any other viable plan to address climate change. So I think the Climate Solutions Caucus' best upsides is that it's providing a space in which, frankly, Republicans can start being recognized as being concerned about climate change. Very few were willing to take that chance previously because of the evidence of other members getting defeated for taking the risk. But the downsides are that it hasn't yet put forth any plan, and some people critique the caucus as possibly providing political cover for certain people, let's say Daryl Issa, for example, who in the past have denied climate change as real or human caused. So we're making steps forward. As Congressman Huffman said, these are baby steps. We need to move faster, and I totally agree with him. But we're moving in the right direction.
And this year, Elders Climate Action are one of our main focuses is going to be on making sure that climate change is part of the conversation in all midterm election campaigns, whether it's by meeting with your candidates, going to town hall meetings, going to candidate forums, and asking questions about where people stand on climate change, and in fact asking them to sign a pledge that they're going to work for solutions to climate change, bipartisan solutions. Because unless we hold their feet to the fire, they will ignore that topic. There's so many other things that people want to talk about.
That's very exciting to hear for me, because what Randall mentioned a couple of minutes ago, primary challenge, that is the technique used by climate change deniers and the fossil fuel industry and such to try to replace congresspeople that are reasonable and accept that climate change needs to have action taken. And again, so primary challenge is a risk. So the more visibility to the issue that can be brought to the public in areas where there may be primary challenges, even this year, 2018, the better. So that's great news to hear.
And Steve, we know that a majority of Americans believe that climate change is real.
You know, it's ironic, this whole thing about carbon fee and dividend having trouble getting off the ground, because you claim people like Rex Tillerson as being in support of it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the great disappointments once he was appointed Secretary of State, that he couldn't persuade Donald Trump to not to walk out of the Paris Accords. And Rex Tillerson, who was the chairman of ExxonMobil, did speak out a number of times in public supporting carbon fee and dividend principles. We've had a variety of other folks that on the conservative side that have stood up and said this is a great way to move forward because it leverages the power of the American market. It returns the money collected to the public equally, so it really isn't a tax. And for all those conservative folks who are in Congress who've taken that no-tax pledge, then they can continue to hold that position and still support this plan. The other thing is, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners agree with us that climate change is real, but some may not, or may not believe it's human caused. You know, I've been a firefighter for 17 years. I've got a couple good firefighter buddies. You know, we'd lay down our lives for each other if need be. But they don't agree that climate change is human-caused. And so I respect them. I appreciate those who are listening that may not share our views. And I'm grateful for your, you know, learning what we have to say. I like also listening to folks with differing views. We need to come together around some kind of solution that really works and that we can all embrace and has staying power so that we don't spend the rest of this decade, I mean, century, you know, watching the livability of our planet basically evaporate.
And you know, I think everybody wants a good future for future generations. There is no one who doesn't care about future generations. And so who cares whether it's human caused or not? If there's something we can do to address it and to turn it around, don't we want to do that?
Right on.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners that you're listening to Corporations and Democracy. Our guests today are discussing what can be done locally for the issue of climate change. And our guests are Margot Frank, who works with the local chapter of Elders Climate Action, and Randall McDonald, who works with the local chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. And we will be able to take questions during the second half of the program. So if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, the number here is 895-2448. Again, 895-2448, and in area code 707 if you're out of the area.
Since this is radio and it's hard for people to keep track of what people say, you can't go back and reread it. Let me just mention again, we're talking about carbon fee and dividend. And what it means is there's a fee on fossil fuel at the source. All revenue, it's not a tax, it's the fee. The revenue is returned to American households, and it's not like a tax credit. You get a check. And then the third part of what you call a three-legged stool is border tariffs, so the companies can't just pack up and leave. Let's take our first call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm just wondering, what makes you think that it's not just already too late? You know, we keep hearing, you know, well, this is a little worse than we thought, and it's a little worse than we thought, and it seems to me that even if everybody just stopped driving, it'd still take, what, 100 years for it to even out, right?
Yeah, it probably is too late, but it could always get worse, right? So let's find out from Margot and Randall what you think about that.
Well, you're right. It might be too late, and I have to say that 4 or 5 years ago, I was in a place of complete hopelessness and doom. And I went to a Work That Reconnects workshop. That's Joanna Macy's work. And I realized that I didn't want to have, when my grandkids are old enough to ask me, Grandma, how come you didn't do anything so that we would have a planet that we could live on? I wanted to be able to say to them, I did everything I could. And I realized I wasn't doing everything I could. And that I think the best antidote to that kind of hopelessness is taking action. And maybe it won't result in really saving the planet for human life. That is certainly possible. But if it can bring us together and help us to do the best that we can as human beings instead of the worst, then why not do that?
Okay, we have another call. Hi, you're on the air with Margot and Randall.
You take the next.
Yes. With Michael and Randall, I thought with Steve and Annie Esposito.
It's our guests are Margot Frank and Randall McDonald, and yes, the co-host is myself, Annie and Steve.
I apologize. Yeah, Steve, I apologize for being dyslexic. The major thing is here, the excellent program, and there is no reason for us to just lie down and die. Let's fight the beast. And the major thing is that I'm recommending, in order for everybody's excellent points and efforts, that we support the constitutional amend. Move to amend
Move
the
to
Constitution.
Amend, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes, don't let the Constitutional Convention of the Republican-dominated many states take effect. that will be our final devastation. I thank you again. I send a hug to both you two, as well as the ones I don't know, but I totally support. Thank you.
Thanks for your call and the hugs, too.
Thank you, and I'd like to comment on that question both the previous caller and the one before him made about it being too late. Let's be honest. It is too late to have the world we grew up in available to our children. It is absolutely not too late to save their world. And in the process, by implementing carbon fee and dividend nationwide, we can, and studies, widely regarded studies have demonstrated, we can create millions of American jobs, grow our economy by more than $70 billion a year, while dramatically reducing carbon pollution, and in the process, preventing the premature deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans who will die due to pollution-driven respiratory and other diseases. So we can do that at the national level. We're asking for people's help. And just as Margo and we all have been speaking about, there's things we need to do at our local level as well, whether it's in our own lives, becoming more carbon neutral, whether it's urging our local elected officials to take action, as Steve has in his own community, as a leader in his community, on climate change. Now, there's things we can do at all levels, and we're not going to give up, not only because we care about our kids and grandkids, but we have enough self-respect to say we're not going to leave this world worse than we found it. And yeah, it isn't our fault. We were born into this crazy economy that's driven by all this polluting practice, but that doesn't mean we can't change it. We will change it, and let's get going.
And, you know, we've been talking a lot about carbon fee and dividend, but it's going to take many different approaches to really turn the tide of climate change. One thing I want to mention is a way to find out what your own carbon footprint is and how many planets it would take to, if everyone in the world lived the way that you live, is something called the Footprint Calculator, and it's www.footprintcalculator.org. I was shocked because I think, oh, I live pretty, you know, low on the spectrum there. And when I did it a year ago or something, it would have taken 1.5 or 2 planets if everyone on the planet lived the way that I do. It was shocking to me.
Yeah, okay. You want to repeat that again, the link?
Yeah, www.footprintcalculator.org.
Okay, that'll shake us up a little bit.
Okay, again, the number here is 895-2448 if you'd like to call in with any questions.
Yeah, one thing, Margo, you had mentioned something about SB 100 and its mandate.
Well, I did a little more research on it yesterday. So Kevin DeLeon, I think he's the head of the California State Senate, proposed legislation a few years ago, actually, I think, that would mandate where electricity power providers resource their energy. And it has been stuck in committee. It has not been able to get out onto the floor for voting. And it's been amended a whole bunch of times. If you go online and look it up, you can read the details of the amended and all the amendments that have been done on it. But in order for California to meet its goal of, I think even being 100% renewable by 2050 or something, there have to be major changes in the energy infrastructure, the grid, the sourcing, and this would lay out how that would happen. So it's a good thing to talk to Jim Wood and Mike McGuire about when they come through.
Okay, we have another call. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to chip in. The big question I've always had about environmental degradation and climate change is that it seems to me free trade and the global consumption economy are the sole cause of all of this. Mm-hmm. And that in any way to, you know, people make this stuff here that's garbage, it lasts 6 months, we throw it away, we ship it around the world, the shipping costs are spectacular. It's not even addressed in something like the Paris Accords that we have to all do with less and maybe change from a growth economy. And it just seems like until the political authorities put free trade on the table and put consumption as the driving force of everything. I mean, it didn't used to be that way. The consumption economy is a fairly recent invention, maybe it was needed to bring wealth to the world, but that wealth is also killing us. And the other thing is, this Paris Accords, much of it is written just absolutely unchecked by neoliberal global corporations that I could give examples if you like. There's just completely and utterly false aspects of, such as that CAFO farming is much less carbon producing than some person in Africa with two chickens in their backyard. Other falsehoods are in there that are just simply they let the corporations write this stuff. And but I think the primary question is, isn't free trade the sole cause of global warming, and couldn't we solve it just by doing with less? I'll take an answer off the air. Thanks
for that call. Appreciate it. Yeah, so what about the system itself?
Well, great question. Let's talk about a command economy that doesn't participate in free trade internally or externally, and it's named China. And it's the largest current polluter. So I think that we do have systemic challenges as a civilization, as a species on the planet that we have to address, as the callers raised, and how to attack that. On this issue of global free trade, the terror border adjustment of the carbon fee and dividend plan does impose some new constraints on trade as it relates to fossil fuel, the component of fossil fuels in that trade, and starts to impose a regime that isn't just free. So we also know that we're in this market economy here in the United States, we're in this global economy throughout the world, and we're not going to see radical changes in that without some kind of effective pressure that's sustained. So this plan is one way. As we also mentioned, there's a lot we need to do right in our own lives. And as the speaker spoke about this consumption economy where, you know, that's an energy-intensive kind of approach. We need to take steps in our own lives to minimize our impact in that regard. And one of our friends, Eileen Mitra, I was speaking with her recently because I was bemoaning the high price for these new electric cars. And she says, well, I bought a used one. You don't have to buy a new one. Buy a used one. And all of a sudden, your driving impact on climate change is dramatically reduced. And I'm inspired by her. And in fact, we're going to be buying one here in the next couple weeks. So there's things that fit our lives at wherever we're at that we can and should do, whether it's writing letters to the editor to raise the profile of the issue, calling our congresspeople, eating less meat. There's a whole range of things. And this is one thing that I think your listeners can find out more about through this great book and website called Drawdown by Paul Hawken. Website is drawdown.org, drawdown.org. There's a compendium at that site and in the book of solutions, many of which we can implement in our own lives and move towards a more balanced, appropriate posture on the earth that we need to.
Yeah, and I'd also like to recommend Naomi Klein's book, Noah's Not Enough. She says the problem is capitalism. That's, or as our caller said, the consumption society.
The consumption society, which was established in the post-war years. For those that have studied that at all, it's we went from the frugal society of the Depression years and during the Second World War, and then consumption was marketed to the masses.
Yep.
After the war, and we're still in that economy.
Okay, we have another call. Hello, you're on the air.
Thanks for the show. My comment is to the too late issue. I just wanted to remind people that we have younger generations that are coming up with new ways of solving problems all of the time. So I just don't believe that a give up, it's too late attitude is a good way to go. And so to bring us out of that, I definitely think that we owe it to the younger generations, and also keeping in mind that science is moving forward every day. And there may be a young person right now in junior high or in elementary school that is going to solve a lot of these problems in the future. So I just wanted to comment to that. And Also, for me, I try to reduce my carbon footprint by reusing some of the packaging that I get at the grocery store. In particular, I don't like to use paper towels too much, but I always buy a six-pack and use the plastic to line my garbage can in my kitchen when I can.
So, okay, thank you for that call. Is that it? Okay, thank you so much. Yeah, so in the short amount of time we have left, maybe we could talk a little bit about what you can do in your own house. I know that, Randall, you've included that in some of your speeches around.
That's right, yeah. Well, I got really lucky in life. I found a great company to work for right in Compshi. And finally, after all these years, I was able to afford putting solar panels in this past March. And all of a sudden, my power bill has dropped dramatically. And with the rebates and with the savings, I'll be able to pay off those panels in less than 10 years, more like 8.
Wow.
And have free power ever since then. And so our next step is to, and we couldn't afford, having just bought these panels, to go out and get a brand new electric car, but Eileen's great suggestion of getting a new one. Well, gosh, we looked in the paper last night, and with the various discounts, et cetera, there's a local car company selling a Chevy Volt for $107,000. It's a 2017 model.
This is a used one, you mean, then?
Yeah. So there's ways that we can, at whatever level of our economic capacity, we can make a difference. Those are two, but I know Margo's got plenty.
Well, I think the drawdown book is a, as you said, a compendium of ideas. But one of the top 10 things that people can do is to eat less meat. And have a more plant-based diet makes a huge difference in terms of greenhouse gases and methane. If you get your electricity through PG&E, you are automatically now getting 70% of your electricity from renewable sources. And if you can afford to pay extra, then you can get 100% of your electricity from renewable resources. The city of Ukiah, I think Steve said, gets 45, or maybe it was 40% without paying extra from PG&E, and the city was 70%.
Around 70%.
Clean, yeah. And you can work with your energy provider to look at, to encourage them to use more renewable sources. Certainly, looking at your own habits of consumption, and if you're hooked on fast fashion, not just fast food, but fast fashion, those kinds of things. And the solar panels certainly is a piece. And looking at, you know, I think one of our challenges in a rural community is that for many of the people in this county, we live in rural areas where there is no public transit option. So, looking at how you might carpool with others.
Yeah, okay. We had several calls, but they gave up on me. Okay, but that's okay.
Please call back whoever was just on the line. We just missed picking up for you.
Yeah, we do have time, you know, for another call or two. And here we go. Hello, you're on the air.
The number one way to stop the cancer of the proliferation of too much humanity and not enough resources is to empower women. That's the way it's been done throughout the world. And every case, they keep referring to other foibles that did it, like, you know, giving women jobs, no, without taking care of the children. No, empower the women. They'll have less children and we'll all have better lives, including those children. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah. Educating girls is one of the top 10 ways on this planet that we can address climate change.
Worldwide education.
Worldwide.
Yes, and making contraception available and sex education.
And I think about what the Hearthstone group from Mendocino County is doing in Haiti and educating girls there.
Yes, Lynn Meadows' group. That's a wonderful thing. Yeah, so there's a variety of ways you can approach that, as our last caller pointed out.
I completely agree. And microfinance. In many third world countries, there's programs now where they're making small loans to female head of households that have small enterprises, and they invariably pay them back ahead of time 100%, and then they've got their own economic thing happening. So the previous caller is absolutely right. That's one of the key ways that we can help make society work better and address this serious problem we have.
And I want to put in a little plug for the SMART train, which I rode for the first time a couple of months ago when I wasn't able to drive back and forth to the Bay Area for something. And it was fabulous. And I got on in Santa Rosa at the first stop, and I got off at the last stop on Airport Boulevard in I got off at Airport Boulevard in Santa Rosa, and it was just such a pleasure to ride on that train. It was a great way to get to the Bay Area.
Oh, well, yeah, that's good to know. It comes as far as Santa Rosa now.
I'd like to make a comment on this, the issue of, well, is there hope and all? And is some of the chaos that we're seeing inevitably going to be worse? I assume the answer to that is yes. But to do nothing for me is to ignore the possibility of minimizing the problem for future generations. And it's just not in my thinking to do nothing when the problem is so obvious. And let me mention one example of that, because it's only in recent years that confirmation of a major global problem has been confirmed. And that is the proverbial hole in the ozone that we were familiar with from 20 and 30 years ago. And it was discovered and realized and getting worse year to year back then. But changes were made in products that industry uses and such. And there was political will to make changes in that affected industry and what kind of products are used for air conditioning, worldwide and such. But that problem got turned around. And it's one of the big global issues that was of its day before so much was known and about climate change at the time. So the next problem that we face now is bigger, but we can certainly do something to minimize it versus giving up. So, and let me lastly mention that one of the main names worldwide on the issue of it being hopeless is a fellow named Guy McPherson. Feel free to look that up and see what he has to say about things. He runs a website called, and I have to think for a second, naturebatslast.org. So you can read some about some of that. That's the most frightening information that he'll give you. And I'm here today to help bring some visibility to people who are doing something local while we can, and I certainly, hope we can do more of this.
Margo, you had something to say?
Well, I was just going to mention that in September of this year in San Francisco, I think it's like the 12th through the 15th, something like that, Jerry Brown is one of the people who has organized this climate summit. International Climate Summit that will be happening in San Francisco. There'll be, I think, a huge march in connection with that. Elders Climate Action will have a presence there. I'm sure Citizens Climate Lobby will also. And even though the Paris Accord falls far short of being the best agreement that could have been made, and even though our government is not supportive of that agreement, it doesn't mean that other places can't take the lead. And our state has taken the lead. Lots of mayors in this country and cities are stepping up. And so that vacuum at the top is being filled on a more grassroots level, which maybe is the best way to go. I don't know.
And it's having elected office myself, I know that politicians don't lead. We follow. I'm tired politician now, but it's up to us citizens to build political pressure, build political will, and so speaking out is so important.
Okay, we're going to try to squeeze in another call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted one thing before it's over. I'll try to make it quick, and that is, I don't know, recently I heard something that scared me very much, and that was Alex and all.
Oops, I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Can you hold still and get a? It sounds like you must be on a cell phone.
Yeah, we're
now we can. Can you hear me?
I can now. Please continue.
I'll try not to move.
Okay.
Anyway, I heard that the Koch brothers, Alex, and all those guys are planning and have been planning for years, a constitutional convention where they're going to change our Constitution into actually a fascist one. And I think we need to be there as a presence and do our own little thing, because those constitutional conventions, I don't know much about them, but they say that they're wide open and you can do just about anything.
Yes, that's true. And we will cover that in future edition of Corporations and Democracy. What you've said is generally true, but it's more detailed we can go into for the moment. But there is a move afoot to change the Constitution with a convention, and it is being, the politics behind it is being manipulated and funded by money, including the Koch brothers and such.
Yeah, thanks for your call. I just want to thank you. That's definitely a good alarm you're setting off there. Thank you. Okay, we just have like a couple minutes left, and I wonder if you want to give out people contact information for your various groups and other links that you think are helpful.
Margo? Okay, I'll go. So to join Elders Climate Action costs nothing, no demands on you. You won't be inundated with lots of emails or phone calls, and you just go to www.eldersclimateaction.org. Our website is in the process of being recreated in a much better format. The old website hasn't been updated with everything, but you can easily join there. You can, if you're on Facebook, you can follow and like us on Facebook. And if you're interested in getting involved on the local level, you can contact me by emailing Margo, M-A-R-G-O, F as in Frank, M-A-R-G-O-F, at eldersclimateaction.org.
Okay, thank you, and Randall.
Yes, and those that are interested in getting involved with the Citizens Climate Lobby, you can go to our website, which is citizensclimatelobby.org. You can also listen into our weekly introductory call every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. That's at 1-866-642-1665, and just enter your passcode of 440-699-pound, and listen in. You'll be fascinated, and if you're like me, you'll join right up. If you want to get a hold of me, you can write me at Randall, R-A-N-D-A-L, at whatcanbedone.com.
Okay, and Steve, do you want to see us out? We have about half a minute.
Well, we do. This has gone extremely quickly today, so thank you for all the calls from listeners. Thank you to our guests. It has been Margo Frank and Randall McDonald. And my guess is that we will be back, the four of us, and I'm thinking 3 months, which would be early April. There's another climate-related event in mid to late April. But this is too good a topic to leave unaddressed. So thank you to listeners. And you've been listening to Corporations and Democracy, broadcast on second and fourth Tuesdays. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another host. Annie and I will return in 1 month, February 13th.